Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Do you remember seventh grade? Would you even want to? Well, that year for most of us is one of those times in your life where you're not exactly sure who you are or where you belong. Of course, it's a time of enormous physical and emotional change, and also a time when your childhood friends sometimes don't become your adolescent friends. My guest today has written about that, an incident of bullying, as well as his first kiss, and a very honest account of his seventh grade year that'll bring your own junior high or middle school memories flooding back. The good memories, but especially those cringe-inducing ones. Even the book itself, done like a school textbook, screams memory. Kevin Brockmeyer is a Little Rock, Arkansas native and the author of several novels, including The Illumination, The Brief History of the Dead, and The Truth About Celia, as well as the story collections, Things That Fall from the Sky and The View from the Seventh Layer. He's received the Borders Original Voices Award, 3 O. Henry Awards, including a first prize for his short story, The Ceiling, a Penn USA Award, a Guggenheim Fellowship, and an NEA grant. While his novels and writings are literary in nature, there's almost always an incident of fantasy or science fiction that occurs in his work. And the same is true for his first foray into memoir, which is slightly ironic for a book described as unflinchingly honest, which in fact it is. Brockmeyer's latest book is titled A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip, a memoir of seventh grade. It's published by Pantheon Books. He'll be the guest of Booksmart Tulsa for an event this coming Monday evening, May 12th at 7 o'clock at Enso Bar at First and Detroit. And he joins us today by phone here on Studio Tulsa. Kevin Brockmeyer, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
After a number of novels and short story collections, you have turned to memoir in this really wonderful book, A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip, which when you pick up the book, it actually feels like seventh grade because your publisher has done that sort of coating on the outside of the book that they do for middle school textbooks to make them basically indestructible. And that must have been really pleasant the way that the book came out.
No, I think it turned out wonderfully. The images and the text are printed directly on the binding, so there's no jacket. And it very much resembles the kind of books you would have found in school libraries, circa 1975 to 1985.
Yeah, all the way down to the typeset. This book is a story of your seventh grade. What made you decide to go back and write about seventh grade?
Well, it was one of the most eventful years of my life. And also one of the most difficult, certainly the most difficult year of my upbringing. And I've spent many years thinking about that time and trying to make sense of it. So it struck me that when I wanted to try my hand at memoir, this would be an ideal year to lend the book focus.
As you write in the book, I think you said it was booked in by a movie I don't even remember, and Top Gun.
That's right. Boy, what was that?
Gotcha. It was booked in between Gotcha and Top Gun. That gives us
all right. Well, Gotcha was a paint gun action adventure movie, starring Anthony Edwards before he lost his hair.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, Top Gun, Tom Cruise.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, what was really interesting about this book? The story of it is how your best friend, as you ended the sixth grade, quit being your best friend. And everything and all the torments that go along in middle school that go along with that. Mm-hmm. And that really seems to be the story of the book. And that was really tough.
I think it was the foundational incident of that year for me and the foundational incident of the book. Now, the book tries to encapsulate as much of my life as it can contained over the course of that one school year. So it's not exclusively about these friendships. But I think the most obvious arc the book follows is the way I began the year with a certain set of very close friends. At the time, I would have told you that they were the most important people in my life, more important than my family was to me. And then midway through the year, I lost that set of friends. And by the end of the year, I had gained other friends, and one other best friend in particular.
Yeah, that's Ethan. I suppose you write this book with real names all the way through.
Well, in fact, I did compose the book with all of the original names.
Uh-huh.
But everybody that I spoke to advised me that was a bad idea and that I should provide them all with pseudonyms. So very late in the process, I did that, which means that you know, Tad is not really named Tad, and Ethan is not really named Ethan, but they're based in all their particulars on people I actually knew.
What's been the reaction? Because you dedicate the book to the entire, I assume, the seventh grade class at Central Arkansas Christian. And Miss V, who was a probably an important teacher for you, who recognized your writing talent.
She did, and was also extraordinarily kind of generous with me and kind to me during a time when I needed it. So it's been a long time since I've been in touch with kind of that set of people. I attended that particular school from the first through the ninth grade, and then left for public school. And my public school friends have remained figures in my life, but most of my junior high and elementary school friends have moved on to other things, with the exception of the boy who became my best friend over the course of that year. In the book, I call him Ethan Carpenter. He still lives in Little Rock, as I do, and I see him every so often. I have mailed him a copy of the book, but I haven't yet heard a report back from him. Otherwise, I was out of touch with the entire cast of the book for a long, long time. But this teacher you mentioned, whom in the book I call Miss Vincent, I had wondered about her. She was only at this school for 1 year. It was her first year of teaching. It was my first year of junior high. And then she got married, changed her name, moved on to other places. So I had no idea what had become of her, but wondered. After I finished writing the book, I wanted to see if I could track her down. So I had done these sporadic Google searches over the years, seeing if I could unearth somebody who seemed to be this person. And I found someone who was teaching English in the Pacific Northwest. And I thought this might be her. So I sent her a letter, care of her school, sent her a copy of The Illumination as well, and told her, you know, this is who I am. I'm looking for the Miss Vincent who taught at CAC this 1 year. If this is you, I just wanted to tell you who I had become and that year was extraordinarily hard for me. And you were very good to me at a time when I needed it, and it made a difference. And I probably wasn't capable of thanking you for that or expressing it at the time, but I wanted to do so now. So I heard back a couple weeks later, and it was indeed the right woman. She was touched to receive the letter and remembered me, you know, after all of these years had passed. And so she has since read the book and, to my great relief, appreciated it. I was a little worried that she wouldn't like it, but she did. She still has family in Arkansas, so she makes it through town every so often. We got together for coffee last summer.
Talk about getting back to seventh grade, because, as you mentioned, seventh grade is probably a difficult time for just about everybody, or maybe now it's sixth grade because middle school starts in sixth grade, but it's that time when you leave your elementary school and go to the next school getting ready for high school. And and at that time it was seventh grade, and that's a tough time. You know, your hormones are going crazy, and it's just, it just seems like it's tough for nearly everybody. Even the ones that we see as the idols of the seventh grade, they're probably having a tough time too.
It would seem to be the case. Nearly everybody I speak to has something to say, if not about seventh grade, then about one of the grades surrounding it that was particularly difficult for them. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, those seem to be the years that people focus on. For me in particular, it was seventh grade. And largely it was because of this particular set of friends who were so important to me and whom I lost over the course of the year. But it's also the case that you're in an environment filled with people, some of whom are adolescents already, physically, biologically, and some of whom are still children. And their physical or biological existence may or may not reflect their mental or psychological existence. And so it's a strange stew of bodies and minds who are all roughly the same age, but not necessarily at the same phase of development.
And, of course, you were, as we refer to, a late bloomer at that particular
time. I was very much a late bloomer. I begin to bloom at the very end of the book in biological terms.
Yeah. And do you think that was the divide between you and your old best friends, was that they were growing up and you didn't seem to be growing up in their mind? And
that was part of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, in addition to that, I was an odd kid in all sorts of ways. And it made more sense for me to be the odd kid with this particular group of friends when there weren't so many of us. But in this new location, there were three times as many students as there used to be. I think gradually, you know, who knows how they would describe this year, but it seems to me in retrospect that, you know, they realized that for whatever reason, I didn't fit into the mix as neatly as I had when we were younger.
Hanging with the odd kid was uncool, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was really interesting the way you wrote about this book, because you don't really get at it from a psychological point of view. It's really your emotions as you're going through this, and you're a kid that doesn't understand the rules have changed.
That's right. You know, the book is, I tried very much to write it as an immersive memoir rather than a reflective memoir. So you don't see Kevin Brockmeyer, the middle-aged author, or at least I hope you don't see him kind of inflecting the action with his attitudes. As best I could, I tried to return to that period of my life and re-experience it on the page as if I were living through it freshly, just as I did the first time around.
Of course, in your writing, it's well known for its fascination with fantasy and flights of fancy and that sort of comic book thing that shows up in a lot of your writing. And, mm-hmm. and in this book is no different. Because at the time when your friends are basically letting you know that you're no longer part of the group, they do it through mm-hmm. a pretty rough bullying. You have this moment of illumination, if you will, and it seems like it's middle-aged Kevin coming back to talk to talk
That's
to middle
exactly
school.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, there is a chapter in the middle of the book that I think of as kind of science fictional autobiography. It's the only such chapter in the book. You know, it's divorced from the main line of mimetic realism that the storyline follows. But yes, the notion is that each and every sentient being at some moment is divorced from the current of his life and given an opportunity to cancel that life as if it had never been or return to it with no memory of this little kind of science fictional encounter. And so Kevin Brockmeyer, age 13, is given exactly such a moment. And he encounters a figure whom he does not recognize as me, but who is in fact me, the middle-aged version of himself, and who tells him something about what his life will become if he chooses to resume it. And he does make that choice to resume it. So he's returned to the stream of his life and remembers nothing about this middle chapter. So it's sort of divorced from the memory of the narrative otherwise, but it is there in the middle, and you as a reader like have the opportunity to observe it and to learn something about who this boy goes on to become.
Well, and what's really interesting is this follows along with so much of your writing, which we get a glimpse of in the book itself, because you're writing stories even back then. And it's usually, as you wrote, they were mysteries, and there was a mystery of the disappearance of Miss V., Vincent, and again, there's this through line. I really hope the little play that you wrote about the disappearance of Miss V was just as crazy as you recount it, because it was a hoot. It was funny.
Oh well, thank you. And you know, my seventh grade self would be appreciative. And it is. I do indeed recount the lines from the play that I recount are lifted word for word from the original play, which in fact, you know, was an artifact of that year of my life. I used to write mystery stories to keep myself entertained in class, in school. I was always the detective, and one of my classmates would disappear, and I would have to solve the crime. And this was maybe the last of those stories I ever wrote, but it was about that English teacher disappearing, and she enjoyed the story and convinced me that I should write it up as a script and put it on as a play in front of the entire school, which I in fact did. The villain turns out to be the principal, and at the end of the play, he pulls a gun on me, the detective, and I karate chop it out of his hand. I'm the big hero of the story.
Now, it got a lot of applause, but again, this is seventh grade again. You were going, okay, were they applauding for what I wrote, or were they just applauding that second hour got delayed by 20 minutes?
Yeah. It's you know, it's hard to tell. I mean, I think at the time, I would have been willing to read that applause and everything else I experienced as wholly sincere. That was another feature of my personality. You know, there are clues in the book that might not always have been the case. and that 13-year-old Kevin might be misunderstanding his experiences in certain ways.
Yeah, that's what is interesting as you write the story, is that this 13-year-old Kevin is utterly devoid of cynicism and sarcasm.
Yeah, no, I think that's so, and I think I was. And, you know, and I don't know how much cynicism and sarcasm I've learned over the years. In a lot of ways, I'm very much like the boy I used to be.
My guest today is Kevin Brockmeyer. His latest book is a memoir of seventh grade, A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip. And I kept waiting for the film strip, I have to tell you, Kevin.
Yeah, well, the original title of the book was simply Seventh Grade. But the people at Random House, my editor and his associates, had this feeling that because seventh grade was so difficult for so many people, that they would be reluctant to buy a book with that title, or they would think it was a book for young adults. And, you know, I hope that it might speak to young adults, but, I mean, the audience I'm really seeking here is an adult audience, primarily, first and foremost. So we read through the book basically looking for phrases that seem to speak to its themes, and that phrase does, in fact, appear in the book. It's during a section when my friends and I, early in the year, visit the Arkansas State Fair. And while we're there, I have this sudden eruption of a memory that seems disassociated from any narrative I would have told myself about my life. I can't quite situate it in time and place. But it has to do with me when I was even younger than that, standing on the edge of a parking garage and flicking, you know, the little kind of bark-shaped wedge of an orange peel off the garage and into traffic. And I have the sense, seventh grade me has the sense, that there's something about this memory, as divorced as it is from any story I might have told myself about my life, that seems more fundamental to my life's meaning than any of those stories themselves have been. And there's something of that feel, I think, about the entire book. It's filled with stories about my seventh grade year, but it might be the case that the most significant memories I retain from that year aren't really part of those stories. They're just incidents that appear in flashes and haven't become part of the, you know, anecdotal structure by which I've made sense of my life. So that's one of the elements that the title is meant to address. Aside from that, I think if you are a person of a certain age, the idea of A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip kind of speaks to a classroom experience that you will remember having had, of sitting down in a darkened classroom that has suddenly become strange and mysterious because it's not the space you're used to inhabiting, and watching a film unfold before you on a screen.
Or and in the case of a film strip, actually one frame at a time. I'm hopeful that that has been eliminated from classrooms by this time.
I'm sure it's
PowerPoints now. But that gets to a bigger point of this whole process of memory, because, you know, these events that probably didn't make a lot of sense at our time, those are the ones in our memory that keep folding back and we keep playing back. And you know, it's a lot of times, especially in seventh grade, it's the dope slap. Why did I do that, or why didn't I do this, or why did I listen to that person, or why didn't I listen to that person, and they take on greater meaning after the event. And getting back into that seventh grade mindset it makes sense that you're going to focus on those events in a memoir like this.
That was the challenge of the book for me. Because many of these events have become anecdotes to me over the years, which means that they're sort of laden with kind of storytelling structures of their own, and they culminate in punchlines or in morals or in meanings. And when you're actually enduring the events of your life or undergoing them, I don't think that they have that obvious narrative structure to them. I don't think life sort of allows kind of meanings or punchlines to emerge naturally from the tissue of your experience. So what I tried to do was strip these anecdotes of all that material and just allow myself to experience them in the thick of all the confusions and textures of my life when I was that age.
As I was reading the book, I was getting a lot of memories coming back that I totally forgotten that I'd had of that particular time in my own life. And I was wondering about how you access that, because I think a lot of times those events that were, we felt like, oh, well, we could have done a lot better in that situation, or just the routine torments of middle school and junior high time, you know, because there are all sorts of routine things that we basically repress. You know, we try not to remember that because it was, there was pain in those episodes. How did you go about accessing that?
You know, it's possible that I don't have as thick or sturdy a repressive architecture as a lot of people do, because those days have remained very present to me, both the joys and the beauties of them and the pains and the difficulties of them. Certainly, you know, that central incident of bullying that I endure in the middle of the year.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine.
I mean, it was very, I mean, it was painful to undergo it at the time, but it was actually the easiest material for me to write because it was all so present to me. Like, those voices have never really left my mind. I remember it very well. Aside from that, like, I think about something Virginia Woolf said about Lewis Carroll, which was that for some reason, we know not what, his childhood lodged in him whole and entire. And I have the feeling that my childhood, or at least portions of it, lodged in me whole and entire. So it was difficult in many ways for me to restrict myself to the vocabulary and the consciousness I think I possessed at the time, but it wasn't hard for me to resurrect the incidents themselves or the sensory environment in which they unfolded. If you're interested in books that will allow those eruptions of memory to occur in you, there's a wonderful book by, I think, maybe even a Tulsa native, but definitely an Oklahoma native, named Joe Brainard, called I Remember. Mm-hmm. And I read that book not long before I began writing Seventh Grade. And it's just a long series of I remember statements. I remember this, I remember that. And you get the feeling when you're reading this book that through these statements, an entire life bursts into light and color. And reading that book, I began, I think, the process of resurrecting many of the memories that would feed a few seconds of radiant film strip when I was writing it.
I think that's an easily understandable statement, because as I was reading your book, the same sort of things, these episodes that you hadn't thought about, there's no reason to think about it really. All of a sudden they come flooding back when you read somebody else, and I could see how that might have been, Joe Brainard's book might have been helpful on that score.
Yeah, it was, along with a handful of other books that maybe I can take the opportunity to recommend. There were a couple memoirs that were influential to me when I was writing this one, both of them about boys coming of age. One of them is the classic Stop Time by Frank Conroy, and the other is a much more recent book called I Will Not Leave You Comfortless by Jeremy Jackson, which takes place in, kind of the Missouri Ozarks, which is near Oklahoma, near Arkansas as well. But there were a couple novels, too, that were informed by the autobiographies of the writers. The Dangerous Lives of Altar Boys by Chris Furman was his only book. He died very young, but it's clearly an attempt to come to terms with his own adolescence. And then So Long, See You Tomorrow by William Maxwell, which is a short kind of jewel of a book that is, I think, beloved by nearly all the writers I know.
My guest today is Kevin Brockmeyer. His new book, Memoir of Seventh Grade, is titled A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip. And he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. You said something a moment ago that sort of piqued my curiosity. It had to do with the idea of, you know, getting the slang right between, you know, 1985, 86-ish, that this is when this book takes place. Because, you know, and there's a nice little bit in the book about how quickly the slang changes and what's cool to say and what's not cool to say. Yeah. I think finding that spot would be tough to remember.
Yeah, well, I mean, the passage that you're specifically referring to, I remember because I had been, my parents had divorced. My father moved away from the state, and I spent the summer with him and came back and saw that all of these things had changed. So those particular items of the vocabulary, I am just, in fact, remembered from my own experience. But there are other elements of the vocabulary in the pop culture of the time that I believed I could pinpoint to a specific date, but I spent a fair bit of time researching online and in magazines from the time and things like that, just to make certain that I wasn't offering up an anachronism of one kind or another.
There was one other thing, the little device that you used throughout the book, which I really enjoyed. It goes back to the first day of seventh grade, and Miss Vincent, mm-hmm. I believe it is asking the students to describe the five things that describe them best. And Kevin yeah. immediately comes up with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Well, maybe not this five, but this five. And this is a device you use throughout the book to sort of make sense of how things are changing from the bullying incidents to later finding this new group of friends mm-hmm. to having your first kiss to everything else that happens in this book.
Yeah, well, I think maybe that was the first sign in my own life of how much, how very much I was a list maker, and I used those structures to kind of organize, like, all sorts of things about my own personality. I still do that to this day. Anybody who attends any of the events I do, the readings I give, is accustomed to seeing me, like, pull out these lists that I keep of my 50 favorite books, which I have, a convenient stack of to hand out to people in the audience. I had not thought about that in connection with the ways my personality has, gone on to exhibit itself, but I think probably I'm exactly the same today in that respect.
So, has this gotten memoir out of your system at this point, or is this something you're going to come back to at another time?
For a little while, I'd like to return to fiction. And I may gravitate back to memoir at some point. I might do another year of school, which was, for me at least, a productive way to organize material like this. I was also in Boy Scouts, all the way through my schooling, and it's occurred to me that that might be verdant ground for a piece of memoir.
Mm. But in the meantime, back to fiction?
In the meantime, I think back to fiction, yes.
Are you working on a new book yet?
I'm tinkering with something, but it's I'm so early in the proceedings that, I don't quite know what it is yet.
Well, one of the science fiction and fantasy elements that are part of most of your fiction, it's interesting to see that in the seventh grade it was alive and well, because that was the thing that turned you on. Marvel Comics, DC Comics, going to the comic book store and picking up the latest periodicals.
That's all true, and then there was a writer I discovered that year named Robert Asprin, who wrote these comic fantasy books called the Myth series, mm-hmm. which had these punny titles like Another Fine Myth or Myth Directions, things like that. And that was maybe the first time that I was aware in some deep way that the books I loved had writers and not simply characters and stories. He's not a writer who means as much to me today, frankly, as he did when I was in seventh grade, but I have very warm feelings toward him because he was, in a lot of ways, my introduction to the world of authorship.
Kevin Brockmeyer, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for talking with me. I appreciate it.
Writer Kevin Brockmeyer is the author of A Few Seconds of Radiant Film Strip, a memoir of seventh grade. It's published by Pantheon Books. He'll be the guest of Booksmart Tulsa for an event this coming Monday evening, May 12th at 7 o'clock at Enso Bar at First in Detroit in downtown Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.